You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. The Oregon Historical Society is featuring an exhibit titled The Yasui Family, An American Story. Members of the Yasui family were among millions of immigrants who came to the United States seeking new opportunities during the late 1800s and early 1900s. The exhibit by the Oregon Historical Society examines relevant questions about citizenship, immigration, racism, and belonging through the lens of one Oregon family. Joining the exchange to tell us more is Megan Lallier Barron, a curator of exhibitions at the Oregon Historical Society. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me the story of the Yasui family.
Well, the Yasui family is pretty complex. We center a lot of the exhibition around Maswell Yasui, who was an individual who came to the United States in 1903, originally to work on the railroad, the Oregon Short Line Railroad, but went on to have a thriving number of businesses in the Hood River Valley, opening a store that was open for 37 years, having numerous orchards and other businesses in the community.
Now, when he came here as a teenager, but he already had family here, right?
Yes. So he came to the United States when he was 16, and he joined his father and two older brothers. His father and his eldest brother returned to Japan, but him and his middle brother continued to stay in the United States.
And you say they opened a store in Hood River?
Yes. The Yasui Brothers store operated in four different locations in Hood River from 1908 until it was shut down by the U.S. Treasury Department in 1941 following the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Okay, I want to get to that shortly, but you're telling me that this store operated for decades.
Yes. Yeah, and it had a combination of Japanese and Western goods. The store not only was a space for Japanese immigrants and Japanese Americans to buy goods, it also functioned as a community space for this community.
So there was this Japanese community in Hood River.
Yes. So there is a community that of immigrants who come to the Hood River Valley working in a variety of industries, including the railroad, timber, and agriculture. So before Maso and his family moved to Hood River, there was already a growing community of Japanese immigrants in the area.
Do we know how large this community was?
I can't give you a number off the top of my head, but if you look at the Japanese American population in Oregon at this time, Hood River is probably one of the largest communities of Japanese immigrants in Oregon at this time.
So at that time, the state of Oregon had a racial exclusion clause in the state constitution that was there when it joined the Union in 1859. How did that impact the Yasui family?
Well, in a variety of ways. So the first generation of Yasuis who immigrated to the United States because of a number of state laws, but also the 1790 Naturalization Act, precluded them from becoming United States citizens. And there were a number of other exclusion laws that happened later in the teens and 20s that also excluded individuals from owning land or operating certain businesses in the state of Oregon. So there was a pretty sizable impact, not only on the Yasui family, but other Japanese families in the entire state.
Well, it seems kind of strange to me that here are these laws that are set up. Oregon was established as a white utopian state, and so you had all of these laws that discriminated against non-white populations, and yet here are these immigrants from Japan coming to Oregon and setting up shop, even though they couldn't own land. I'm assuming they own their businesses.
Yeah. I think the Hood River community is unique in that at this time in the early 1900s, you do have individuals, you have white individuals who own property that are looking to have their land cleared in order to operate agricultural businesses, and they hired immigrant labor, often Japanese, to clear that land. And as a form of payment, sometimes it would be a cash payment, but other times it would be portions of land. So it created a unique situation where there were Japanese immigrants who perhaps couldn't purchase land outright, but were landowners because of this this situation.
So under this barter system, where they were exchanging work to in order to get land, how did they continue to own that land under the law?
The second generation of Yasuis who were born in the United States are American citizens. And because they're American citizens, they can own land. So there is a bit of a loophole where land could be put in the names of this second generation so that they are the landowners, but the older generations are able to work the land.
My guest is Megan Lalier-Barron, a curator of exhibitions at the Oregon Historical Society. Now, you mentioned that there was the lead up to or the, within in World War II, the concentration camps. What happened to the Yasui family?
It's complicated because not the entire Yasui family. So Masuo, his wife Shizuyo, his older brother Rinichi, and Masuo and Shizuyo's nine children are not all in the same place when Executive Order 9066 is signed on February 19th, 1942. Prior to that, Masuo is picked up by the FBI. He is arrested 5 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor and is kept in a variety of detention centers throughout the entirety of World War II and is released 6 months after the end of the war. The Yasui family members who are still living in Hood River, and that is mostly the younger children of those nine, are sent to the Pinedale Assembly Center in California and then later to Tule Lake War Relocation Camp, which was an incarceration camp also in California. There are a variety of Yasui children that are attending university at this time. So some of them are on the East Coast and are not in the exclusion zone that was formed on the West Coast, so they remained at university. Other Yasui members moved to Denver, and then Minoru Yasui, who is one of Masuo's children, has his own unique journey during incarceration.
So what happened to Masuo?
Masuo Yasui was a lawyer. After the attack on Pearl Harbor, his father sends him a telegram saying you need to, he's working in Chicago at the time, and he says you need to come back to Oregon and serve your country in World War II. He tries to do this and is denied by the U.S. government. So he sets up a law office in Portland. And because of Executive Order 9066, there are a number of curfews that are enacted for Japanese and Japanese Americans in this exclusion zone on the West Coast. And as an American citizen, he finds these curfews unconstitutional. So he, as a lawyer, decides that he is going to challenge the constitutionality of this through the courts. So he purposely broke curfew in Portland. He was arrested. His case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upheld a lower court's decision that he was in the wrong by breaking curfew. And he spends time in Minidoka incarceration camp in Idaho, but he is also incarcerated at the Multnomah County Jail. 9 months of his sentence is spent in solitary confinement, and then is later released and brought back to Minidoka.
So this is a story of a family that pursued their dreams here in America and found a nightmare.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think this, like I think many immigrant stories, people are coming to the United States for a better life, and they hope that that place is and their government is welcoming. And I think for Japanese and Japanese Americans, they learned that that was not the case.
What do you hope people will take away from this exhibition?
I think currently what's happening in the United States, there's a lot of questions around citizenship and birthright citizenship and the place of immigrants. And I think that those concepts are not new in American history. I think there are things that we there have been talking about for 250 years. And I think that I would really love people to take away this exhibition, the understanding of a family experience and the ability to challenge issues that you think are wrong, and the ability to see, to be able to persevere through conflict.
Well, you say the problems of racial discrimination experienced by the Yasui family exist in our society today, of course. But what are we learning about our society through the lens of families like this that are victimized?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I would want people to learn that. I think for folks who might experience discrimination, prejudice, or racism, that they're not alone in that experience, and that there is a way to fight for equality, and that they shouldn't lose hope in doing that. Because I think this family is a good example of how they have experienced something terrible and are able to not only persevere, but also challenge those systems.
So this is an Asian family, a Japanese family, and the experience that they had of discrimination is still being felt by Asian families today. Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. I'm personally not Asian, but I can imagine that that is continuing today.
And the immigrants that come here are experiencing discrimination as well.
Yes, I believe so.
And it seems to me that the dynamic that we're witnessing here is that in the early 18th or 19th century, when these immigrant families were coming here, they were experiencing discrimination from the white communities that lived here. And that is the same dynamic that we're seeing today. Are white populations or attendees coming to your exhibition and finding that there's a trend here that needs to be disrupted or disturbs them in some way?
Well, I would hope that if there are individuals who come to the exhibition that might have preconceived ideas about Asian immigrants or anybody outside of the United States, I would hope that seeing this exhibition would challenge some of those ideas. I think we try to put in the exhibition wherever possible moments that you might find in an ordinary family. Our exhibition opens with a home movie from a family reunion. I'm hoping that people can see themselves in that sort of imagery, even if they are not Japanese American. So I'm hoping that people are able to challenge their ideas if they have anything that might be discriminatory and make them maybe question why they have those ideas.
Okay, we have about a minute left. What does the Yasui family say today about your exhibition?
We worked pretty closely with a few members of the Yasui family on this exhibition, and I think that they were able to see it just before it opened to the public, and I think they are very proud of what we were able to accomplish in the space.
Okay, well, we just have a few seconds. How can people see this exhibition?
The exhibition is open at the Oregon Historical Society until September 6th of 2026, so it's a pretty long run, so come on down or to the Oregon Historical Society.
Okay, thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
My guest was Megan Lelier-Barron.